We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also very happy to have back on the program once again Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here and we talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. So the idea is that if there's a problem, maybe you still have some problem, some lingering problem from the last growing season, and you'd like to talk about that, okay. Maybe there are folks who are already thinking about what they would like to be doing in their garden in the growing season to come. Maybe you have that spot, and you know what I'm talking about. You have some problem spot, and you're wondering, well, what do I do with this place? Maybe you'd like to get some suggestions on particular plants that might be good in particular situations. Or, you know, whatever. We can also do houseplant questions, too, if you want to talk about that. Things that grow in and around the home. Those are the things that we talk about when Sandy's here. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, so that if it would be a long-distance call, use that. We'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. And you may email your questions to will-talk, W-I-L-L-talk, at illinois.edu. You want to do it that way. Whatever way you want to do it, you're certainly welcome to get involved in the program, ask your questions. Sandy will see if she can help you out. Thanks very much for being here.
Yeah, good morning.
I just understand you were just in Florida.
Yeah, it's a burden. Sometimes you got to go to Florida and see your dad. It's such a burden, but, yeah. You know, I tough it out. But it is, I mean, you know, obviously the weather is nicer, but it is interesting to go to different places like that and just see how they garden and what kinds of things they do. And the soil is just so much different down there. Of course, it's all sand, or a lot of it's sand. And you just don't realize how lucky we are sometimes. I don't realize sometimes how lucky we are, that just what great soil we have.
We got great dirt. Really amazing.
It is really amazing.
It is really amazing. Yeah. And that it's so rich,
right.
just right off the bat.
Right, that's
pretty amazing. You put stuff in there, it grows.
Yeah, it really does. So, that's kind of the interesting part, because I have this one area in my dad's lawn area, the flower bed area, that over the years we've been planting, you know, we've put in compost and soil, and I don't know where it goes. Because I come back 6 months later and it's sand again. So there's something going on there where it doesn't even, you know, seem to make a difference when you start adding compost.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, given that, though, I mean, given that we do have these rich soils, does it make sense to do some amending even here? I mean, and how do you do that?
Right. Well, I think a lot of it depends on, because I know I end up talking to a lot of people, certainly, that maybe in, they have a newer home or subdivision area where the regular soil, the original soil, has been removed completely, or sometimes you even end up with these situations where there's clay, and then the regular soil or the good soil is underneath clay even. So sometimes you end up sort of these inverted sort of zones where actually the good stuff's below that. So I think probably the people that really do need to be thinking about amending soil would be anybody that has a lot of clay in the soil. And then that's a big issue. Hmm. Because for a lot of the plants, you know, if you read them time and time and again, they'll say moist, well-drained soil. How many times have you read that? They like, a lot of the plants like well-drained soil. And unfortunately, clay, it holds on to moisture, but it often holds on to it way too long. So, and really some of the best things that can be done, I was talking about sand earlier. Sand is not the thing to add. Up here is not the thing to add if you're wanting to add drainage. You really need to think about adding organic matter. So things like compost, anything along those lines is really going to help your clay soils. The problem with sand is you have to add a lot of sand to really make a difference. Otherwise, if you just add a little bit of sand, you're just going to form bricks. It actually makes it worse. So unless you're willing to add like 8 inches of sand, I mean, it's a lot of sand, and work that into your soil. It's almost half and half sand and soil. Otherwise, I wouldn't add sand because it's not going to help you any. So it's a good thing to sort of keep in mind, because I hear that a lot where people want to add sand, and it's not the thing to do. So you can add a little bit of compost each year, and you're not going to add, you know, too much or not enough or whatever over time. So it gives you a lot of you have a margin, a large margin of safety there, where you don't have to worry about adding too much.
Well, if you do have a, have places where you have clay, how do you get that? You know, I've even had an experience in my yard where I have a good soil, but here and there, and I think mostly it's places around the house where there has been some work done. So either they got things churned up, or they, I'm not sure if they added something else or even what it was they did, but there are just a few isolated spots where you end up with these big masses of clay where you could just get in with your hands and you could work it, and you know, well, yeah, I know what this feels like. This is like modeling
pottery,
clay.
Yeah.
It's like doing pottery. And I wonder, well, how, you know, I get in there and I try to get it broken up and I try to, you know, mix compost in there. And I'm not exactly sure what the alternative is other than, you know, with a metal claw or with my hands or, you know, maybe with some kind of power tool to try to get that stuff broken up and to work in the stuff you're trying to work in, how you get it worked in.
Right. I think probably one of the big things is one of the problems with clay is the fact that it does hang on to soil, hang on to water for a long period of time, and it is not to work it when it's too wet. That's probably the big thing. You have to let that clay dry out enough, because if you work it when it's too wet, then you are just creating these, you know, a pottery. It just turns into bricks. It really does if it's too wet. So you have to give it a find that perfect time, whatever it is, when it's nice and, you know, hopefully somewhat dry, and then add your compost to that so you're not creating more problems by working soil when it's too wet. And then you'll be surprised how much, if you even just put a top layer of compost on the top of that clay, if you have a halfway deep decent worm population, worms are pretty darn good at actually moving soil around and moving organic matter around. So they're pretty darn good at doing that. So obviously it takes longer, but over time, just adding compost and letting the worms do their thing, a lot of times, you know, they'll do a lot of the work for you over time. And sometimes, you know, a lot of these areas, it's because it's lower for whatever reason. And so sometimes it may be just a matter of actually trying to raise that area by adding compost soil or whatever and sort of changing the drainage a little bit. Sometimes it can make a difference. But at any rate, so I'm glad to be back to the good old soil, even though it is cold up here, but to be back to Illinois soil.
Well, we have gotten some moisture. For example, you know, in December we had a record snow for December. Although I was interested when they talked about, so what they do is they measure the snow. They actually measure snow depth as snow. But then they take that and they melt it down to see what the liquid equivalent is. And actually, it turned out the liquid equivalent wasn't all that much. So I think we may actually have a deficit, a moisture deficit, even though we had all this snow. So I'm not exactly sure how that works.
Yeah, because some of, as we know, you know, whenever we have certain snow, some of them are just a lot fluffier and have a lot more air and stuff in them, so it does make a big difference. So in the long run, I guess we don't have that much more moisture in
I'm
the soil.
I'm not sure that we really do.
Yeah.
I don't think that's bottom line. So, we'll have to see if we have a spring like we had last spring.
Right. I mean, I know we don't necessarily like soil, but for a plant, purposes, it really is a good insulator. There's not much better insulator than soil. I'm sorry.
And then snow.
I still got soil on my mind. Yep. And then snow, because it keeps it, you know, when we get really frigid temperatures, it looks like we may end up at the end of this week, if we have that nice snow on top of there, then it doesn't get quite as cold, you know, for those plants. It really does protect them. So, you know, we may not like snow, but it's really good to have a nice snow cover of some sort to protect the plants. So.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you would suggest you could do, even if you say you have hardy perennials? I mean, they're supposed to withstand that.
Right.
But particularly if we have a fair amount of freezing and thawing, should you actually think about trying to provide some protection? Or do you just think, well, you know, they grew up to take those kind of conditions and they should be able to?
Right. Well, I think a lot of it, when we do have the freezing and thawing, what happens with a lot of plants, and I've even noticed this probably especially with things like coral bells, heuchera, something that has that really tight rosette kind of center to them, they tend to frost heave. And so you go out there later and you see there's actually roots showing, and it's simply because it's sort of frost heaved out of the ground. So I think it's, you know, as the snow starts to melt here a little bit, is go out and look at your plants now, and you may find that you need to, I wouldn't push them down. What I would probably do is either push a little mulch around them, or probably even better yet, if you had a little soil from somewhere, to put a little soil around to protect the roots. So I think it's always good, you know, halfway through the winter like this, to go out and look at your plants, because you may be surprised and things, and you may still be able to do some things like, you know, covering the roots. Certainly if you have plants that maybe are broadleaf evergreens, you can take a look at your boxwoods or rhododendrons or whatever and see if they're experiencing any really hardship. And often that happens to do with just the wind that we get. You know, sometimes we haven't had had, you know, we still have plenty of wind, but maybe haven't had quite some of the winds that we've had before. But if we get really frigid temperatures, lots of wind, it's really tough on those broadleaf evergreens. Those you could take, you know, if you happen to have a leftover Christmas tree or access to one, you know, pine boughs just to sort of protect them. You certainly could put up a fencing with a burlap or just wrap them in burlap. Something to sort of keep the wind off of those broadleaf evergreens might help. So I think that's good. Plus, I think this is a great time to start looking at rabbit damage. This is a time of year we'll start, rabbit damage will start showing up, and they're going to be, because they don't have quite as much food, they're going to start nibbling on a lot of stuff. So especially things like roses. I've had them chew down raspberries. You'd think that'd be a horrible thing to chew down, but, you know, if you get hungry enough, I guess raspberries are okay. And so this is a time to do that, to sort of protect those. You may have to get some chicken wire or something to protect them, because they'll can once they start picking on a certain plant, they'll pick on it all winter long, and you may find that at the end of the season or by the time spring rolls around, that plant is pretty well gone.
And you really do have to get it. You have to put up a physical barrier.
I think that's the best bet. There's a lot of repellents out there, and you certainly can try those. But, you know, if you're a hungry rabbit and you got nothing else to eat, you're going to, you know, deal with a little bit of smell. You know, they're just going to eat through it anyway. So you're really better off doing any kind of protection like that. Any kind of fruit trees that you might have, especially young fruit trees, they love to pick on those. So anything along those lines, I think this is a good time to go around and walk around and see how things are doing.
Our guest in this hour of focus, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here once a month on a Tuesday, and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. So maybe you're needing some advice on taking care of a problem, or you're thinking about what you'd like to do with the garden in the coming growing season, or houseplant questions. We can do that too. Any and all of that. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, good, anywhere that you can hear us, and that's 800-222-9455. And we do also have the email, so if you'd like to send along your question that way, you can do that, will-talk@illinois.edu. Is there anything that's going on that you in the way of events that you might want to talk about?
You know, generally, January is really a good time for a lot of horticulture things that are going on. And this Saturday, January 22nd, at the Holiday Inn in Urbana, is Herb Day. And Herb Day has been going on for a number of years. I know Chuck Voigt is sometimes a guest here on your show. And this is really a great opportunity. They have lots of great vendors there, and you can actually go to the vendors, even if you don't go to the event, and kind of see what's out there when it comes to all kinds of herbs, whether it's herbs you eat, plant, grow. They do a lot of sort of apothecary kinds of things where, you know, creams and all those kind of things with herbs. So it's really a great opportunity to just to learn more about herbs. A number of great programs, one's on sustainable herbal landscape design. So that's kind of interesting, from Terry Hollenbach, who's Nancy's Meadow Herbs out of Wisconsin. Diane Nolan, of course, is going to be doing herb and flower designs to music. That's one of her all-time popular things. And then Chef Michael McGreal is doing healthy meals with herbs. So lots of great opportunities. So that's January 22nd. If people want to go ahead and register for that, it would be a good idea to register today to make sure you get a wonderful herbal lunch. And people can call 217-244-1693, and they can find out more information about Herb Day this Saturday at the Holiday Inn.
Okay, great. We have a caller here. Let's talk with them in Champaign. Line number one. Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Yes.
Good morning.
Hi.
Sandy, it's wonderful to hear you're talking about what to do in this sort of midwinter time. My question relates to using like a anti-desiccant spray. I do have a broadleaf. I have a beautiful rhododendron that I forgot to cover, and I'm wondering how you feel about the those anti-desiccant sprays and whether or not, if you think they're okay, can I use it now?
Yeah, actually, you know, I've had kind of mixed results or actually mixed comments from people about the anti-desiccants. I think it's certainly worth using. Now, sometimes people said they don't think it made much difference one way or the other, but sometimes that's hard to figure. But generally, the only thing is reading those labels, most of those will tell you that it needs to be above like 35 degrees for 24 hours or something when you use those. So you might be able to get away with it today. But read the label and make sure that there isn't a temperature restraint on that, on when you actually use it. So I think it's worth it. And it's certainly for broadleaf evergreens, things that you know, may have an issue with the wind that we get. I think if it's really, really windy areas, I would be more apt to go with something like burlap. I know it's not all that attractive, but burlap or something that's going to give an actual physical barrier to the wind.
Great. Thank you. Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Okay. This is about watering. Should we water, like, now we've had this above freezing stuff, and I'm really worried because we didn't get a whole lot of, you know, rainfall in the late fall. Is there any benefit to doing some sort of watering now?
Yeah, probably not so much, to be honest with you. It depends on the soil temperatures. Usually the plants really can't do a lot with the water that's in the soil unless it's above like 45 degrees soil temperatures. And I think they were hovering right around 40 or so last time I checked, and maybe a little bit colder now. So, you know, if we hadn't had any snow whatsoever, then I'd say, yeah, that might be an issue and you might want to go ahead and water. But I think at this point, I think it'd probably just wait. But I think it's good that you think about these things. If you had a brand new, you know, if you're concerned about an evergreen or something that you planted, I'd be more concerned about looking at it, making sure that the roots haven't come out of the soil or make sure it's mulched a little bit, something like that. I think I'd be more concerned about those kinds of things rather than trying to worry about watering them right now.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, can I ask one more question?
Sure, you're on a roll.
All right, so this is about mulch. I love cypress mulch, but I'm also concerned about the rumors about the fact that we're no longer, you know, that a lot of the manufacturers aren't using the leavings from construction, but they're actually harvesting cypress trees in the swamplands. What are your thoughts on different kinds of mulch? And do you know anything about the cypress mulch? Is there any way to figure that out?
I think the problem is the fact that on those, unless you know that manufacturer or can really check on that manufacturer, a lot of them are using, unfortunately, just virgin cypress. It's not stuff that's not the trailings. It's not the endings, like you say, of just sort of leftover stuff. It truly is just young cypress trees that they're cutting down and using because it's a big market. You know, people buy cypress mulch and it's a big market. So my thoughts, rather than worrying about tracking down which one's using the stuff that's really is trailings and which one's using virgin stuff, I really think you're better off, and actually it's a good product anyway, is just to go with your local landscape recycling center, you know, the one that we have here in Urbana. It really is a great product, and you can get different sizes depending on what you want. The nice thing is that they do compost it to some extent, so that's good. Plants like that. They like the sort of, you know, big pieces to little pieces. You know, really is, it's one of those things. Now, maybe cypress might last a little bit longer, but, you know, in the long run, you know, by the time you think about the fact that they have to truck all this cypress mulch up, they have to put it in plastic bags, it's not very environmentally sound to use the cypress mulch in my estimation. So you're really better off using local stuff. That would be
so
my thought.
I did actually use from Urbana's Recycling, I used regular hardwood mulch, and I really like that. Is there some way to tell whether or not the mulch itself is actually composted enough and ready to go? Can we just assume that the stuff that we pick up in the spring is not? They were saying that, you know, if mulch isn't, like, if it's not composted enough, that it can actually harm the plants.
Yeah, I think the only time I'd be really concerned about that is that if you have truly someone, maybe a local arborist or whatever, is, you know, it was a tree yesterday and now they've chipped it and now it's just the fresh stuff. And
right.
That kind of stuff sometimes it can be an issue, especially for small shrubs, things that are young tree seedlings, those kind of things, because it actually, as it degrades, it actually robs some of the nitrogen from the soil. So it's an issue on small plants in particular. You know, large mature trees probably aren't going to see a whole lot of difference on that. But on young stuff, which a lot of us have, I would go with the stuff that's been composted. And the Landscape Recycling Center, from what I've seen, they're very good at, you know, they turn it periodically. And they, you know, they want to get the product out. And so they're really doing a good job of, you know, the new stuff that comes in goes to the end of the line and then and you're getting the stuff from the other end of the line. So it generally has been composted. And how you can tell is just the look of it. If it looks like the stuff that plants really like is the stuff that has a little bit, almost looks like it has a little soil in it, and then some bigger pieces, and then bigger pieces than that. So they like that sort of gradation in sizes. So that's the good stuff. And so if you pick it up and hold it and look at it, then you know it's gone through maybe a certain amount of composting just by the fact that it's darker. Generally, the stuff that isn't composted tends to be a lot lighter color.
Mm-hmm. So if you're not sure, I have heard, and I think I read somewhere, to take the compost that you get and set it aside for a season.
Yeah. Now, if you're talking about mulch, you may want to set... Right, mulch. And that's generally what I've done is that when somebody gives me a big load of wood chips, is you just let it sit for 3 or 4 months, and it'll start to decompose on its own. And that's probably a good thing to do just on a regular basis, to sort of just do it, and then you don't have to worry about it too much. You could just watch the plant. You know, if you do have to use fresh stuff, you could always use a little fertilizer or just watch the plants and make sure that there's not an issue with just because they'll start to turn yellow if they're having a nitrogen deficiency. So you can kind of do that. So I think a lot of it is just, you know, using the products that we have. It's local stuff. It's, you know, we're not having to deal with the big plastic bags. And actually, they did a really cool program last year. I assume they'll do it again, is that you buy the bucket and then you get, like, you fill the bucket, you know, for the all season long. You know, you pay for the bucket once, but then you just, after that, you don't have to pay for it anymore. You just keep filling your bucket. So it's really, obviously, if you don't need a whole lot, that's really a good way to just have a little extra mulch or compost or whatever from time to time.
Great. Thanks so much, Sandy.
Okay,
thanks for the call. See, I have been meaning for a long time to go to the Yard Waste Center and kind of see what they have available, because they do have a number of things like that available. And I guess I was wondering, well, do I really need to have a truck?
Yeah.
Do you need to, you know, back up your truck there and just shovel in it? Because they don't have it. You know, you go to the garden center, they package it in neat
little people like it.
Packets and of a fixed poundage, and, you know, it's all ready to go. So you pretty much do this. This is a bulk product that you have to figure out how you're going to transport it then if you go there.
Right, you can, other than the fact that, as I was mentioning, we had it last year, and I think it was for mulch and compost both, but it'd be worth checking out, is actually you just buy the bucket, and then I think it was like $10 for the bucket. And then after that, you just go out and get it filled for free. So you have these big 5-gallon buckets. Now, obviously, if you need a ton of this stuff, you'd probably be better off actually going ahead and having them deliver some. They will deliver it for you for a fee, depending on what area you're in. So there's some things. Obviously, there's a little bit of logistics, and I know that's why people like using those plastic bags of mulch, because it's easy to carry around, it's easy to throw in the back of your trunk. And, you know, but once in a while, we have to sort of think through that a little bit farther to see if it really makes sense or not.
All right. We're halfway through the show here. We have had one call. Folks, what are you doing out there?
Oh, I don't know. They
already have a second call.
They're reading.
They're maybe like enjoying some quiet time. I would be. Sandy Mason is here. She's with us once a month, always on a Tuesday, to talk about things that grow in the home landscape, lawn and garden care. And so if you have questions about trees, shrubs, flowers, vegetables, indoor plants, things, you know, whatever grows in the home landscape, you can give us a call. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Something else that you might want to talk about?
Yeah, there are a couple. You know, I mentioned Herb Day is this Saturday. The other big thing, it's actually the Mid-America Horticulture Trade Show up in Chicago. And this is probably one for really serious plant geeks or, you know, professionals that are really in the landscape business and stuff. So this is January 19th to 21st. This is the Mid-America Horticulture Trade Show up at Navy Pier in Chicago. And you can just go to their website at www.midam.org. And just check that out. And it's another thing where they have lots and lots of speakers and also vendors. And you can see the, you know, latest, greatest in tools or whatever. So it's always an interesting place to go.
Okay. Now we're getting some calls. All right. Let's go to line one in Urbana. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
It's nice to know that Sandy's back in town. I have a question. This morning I transplanted I think it's called an angel wing begonia, very large leaves that have little white dots on them. And I've been growing the stems so that they had roots, and I put them in new potting soil this morning. The pot's about 8 quarts, I think, And I just put three stems into that pot. Do you think that's enough, or do you think I can add more stems?
I think 8 quarts is, yeah. Oh, so that's a pretty good sized pot then, obviously.
Oh, maybe I read it wrong. It's not too big. It's maybe it's 4 quarts.
Well, the begonias, probably the big thing with the begonias is you probably can go ahead and put more stems in. If it seems like there's lots of soil surface, you can usually do a pretty good job of putting lots of them in there simply because they don't mind being a little bit crowded. And actually, I think they look better a little bit crowded because they tend to be sort of one-stemmed and not quite as full. So I think putting several stems in there, I think, will be just fine. Probably the biggest thing, and you may have figured this out already, but for other folks, is those begonias, they like to be moist, but they don't like to be overly moist. So,
right.
Yeah. So just making sure that you get them in a good well-drained potting soil or soilless mix or something like that and then go from there. But good. Good to see they're growing.
Yeah, very good. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Over to Kankakee. This is our next person, line 4. Hello.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a garden that I started, I had part of it in garden for several years, but then I added on to it. And so it's about 20 by 10 or 20 by 12. And I used what they call the lasagna method, where you put down layers of paper and peat and then put mulch on top of that, and had a very successful garden. A friend of mine has a horse, and I have some of the leavings of the horse, so to speak.
and
I'm putting that on top of the garden now, and my intention is to I have about 5 or 6 bags, maybe 50-pound, size bag so I put that all around on the garden, and I intend to put more mulch on top of that. Should I put anything else in there, or am I on the wrong track, or am I on the right track, or have I put too much on, or can you put too much on?
Yeah.
That's my question.
Yeah. So last year you did the lasagna method of sort of doing the layering, and so this is that same garden then that you're.
Correct.
That you're going to put then the leavings. I like that. The horse leavings.
Horse leavings.
I like that.
With the horse left behind.
Yeah, with the horse left behind.
He's walking down the road.
Yeah, it's usually how it is, isn't it? So you said you have 5 bags?
Yeah.
Is that what you said? So that sounds fine. I guess, so was any of this composted first, the horse leavings?
No, it's
fresh.
Great stuff. But I put it on. Before the snow came, so I assume that some of it will disperse among the
right
on top of the existing garden.
Right, and then you're going to put something on top of that, then
correct.
The horse.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then
more
is
mulch.
More mulch. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Is this a vegetable garden or a flower garden?
Vegetable.
Okay. The only thing, I guess, I think you're on the right track, adding the compost, because that's the stuff that and really, basically, it's what horse leavings are going to be. They're going to decompose and compost. So I think you're on the right track of just adding more of that. And then, because once you do the main lasagna where you have several layers, generally you don't have to do that whole thing all over again. You just add more layers.
Right.
So I think you're on the right track. Probably the big thing, I think, because it is a vegetable garden, and you may realize this already, is just the fact that if just to make sure that this is well decomposed, or to make sure that you have something on top of it, because for sanitary reasons and stuff.
Right. I don't want to be walking through it when I'm gardening.
Right, and just the fact that it's going to be splashing up onto vegetables and stuff, just to make sure you put stuff on top of it. Or if people are going to use horse leavings or cow leavings or whatever, just to compost them or something first before you actually put them out there.
Okay.
But you're right, they will probably fall apart because of the winter.
All right.
So it sounds like you're on the right track. Go for it.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
You have a wonderful program.
Oh, thank you for the call. We're a little bit past our midpoint here. Again, we'll keep going with Sandy Mason. You've got questions about things that grow on the home landscape, ornamentals, stuff you can eat. We can talk about houseplants, any and all of that. You got a problem or you're just looking ahead to the growing season yet to come, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. And next, we have someone in Urbana. Line 2, hello. Line 3, go ahead.
Hi,
yeah.
This is a question about a hibiscus. Friend had a hibiscus outside this summer. It bloomed very well. She brought it inside and now wants to know how and when she should cut it back before taking it outside again.
Yeah, I personally, I generally wait until around the 1st of March or so until we get through the really, I don't know where she has it now, but they really need a lot of light. So I don't know if she's got it in supplemental lighting at all.
Either, yeah.
Yeah, usually I wait until around the 1st of March or so when we start getting those longer daylight lengths and just the fact that then they'll be able to come out of it. And it's probably pretty good rule of thumb as far as just when you cut things back. You generally want to do it right before they have this perfect opportunity to regrow. We generally don't like to prune things way back and then have them hang out for a couple of months trying to grow them.
How much do you cut it back?
You can cut them back really pretty heavy. I probably wouldn't cut it back much beyond, you know, the stems. If you could probably get it back to like the size of a pencil, the pencil itself, and still cut it back and have it regrow, and maybe even back a little bit farther. But usually you can do some pretty heavy pruning on those, and usually they look horrible over the winter time. I don't know how hers looks, but mine has like four leaves on. You know, they just don't get enough light, I don't think. But
so
you know,
cut it back. Like to each stem is like a pencil?
Yeah, I mean, you can cut it back that hard if she wants to. You don't have to do
I'll
it that way. But you can do a pretty hard prune on those, and they will still leaf out.
Okay.
So
great.
Sure,
thanks.
Sure.
Very good. Again, well, other questions? 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. I wanted to go back to the horse manure just for a second.
You said manure.
I know. I know. I like saying bad
I guess
stuff
we can
in the
say that.
I think we could say that. There's some other things we can't say, but that we can say. If you're somebody like the caller who's lucky and have access to that material, that can be a really, really good thing. But I guess the point is you just green manure, you really don't want to just take that and just put that right on the garden. So it would just the easiest either thing to do, either add it to your compost pile or maybe have a separate pile. And what you need to do is just you need to let it sit there for a while.
And you could do either one. I think ideally it'd be nice if you just add it to your compost pile and then just sort of mix it in that way. But, you know, sometimes depending on where you get it, sometimes the stables have actually had to keep that for a period of time. So it's almost kind of, you know, decomposed somewhat already. And a lot of it depends on, you know, kind of some of the things that they might use. You know, if they're using sawdust for bedding for the horses, sawdust is a good thing to add to your composting pile, but it really will rob nitrogen from the soil very fast. So you never want to use straight sawdust on soil. So if there's a lot of sawdust in it, I'd definitely stick it in the compost pile first and let it decompose. And just for health reasons and stuff, it's just a good idea probably just to really make sure that that stuff is well decomposed if you're using around vegetables too.
What do you think about wood ashes?
Actually, wood ashes are fine. If you don't have it, you know, it's one of those things that actually will raise the pH over time. So it will make it more alkaline over time. But it does add a certain amount of nutrients. And I think there's a little phosphorus and potassium in it. So there's a little bit of nutrients in there. And other than just the fact that it's going to raise the pH over time, and I wouldn't use it a ton of it on one spot, but there's no reason why you couldn't use wood ashes. Charcoal ashes are another story, but certainly wood ashes are fine in those folks that have that.
So that's what I'm thinking of, what comes out of your fireplace, not the little bit that comes off your barbecue grill.
That's a different deal. Because it's a petroleum product, so you wouldn't want to add that to your compost pile. But certainly wood ashes, no problem adding it to your compost pile. Adding, you know, just a thin layer on your garden and stuff is not a big deal. I wouldn't use it around blueberries or rhododendrons, anything that likes a more acidic soil. But other than that, it's fine. And the other thing I was going to mention about the whole horse manure thing is it's also a good idea to find out what they're feeding the horses, because I have had some people complain on pasture-fed horses, they tend to get more weed seeds coming up in their vegetable garden and their flower garden. So you may want to, you know, if they're really pasture fed, you may want to either try a little bit at a time or make sure you put it in your compost pile first so any weed seeds can sort of do their thing before you actually stick it in your vegetable garden.
Okay. Several callers here, and the next is in Rossville, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I have a question about pruning trees. Are the branches ever on a fruit tree ever too big that you should not prune them?
On a peach tree, is that what you said? Or
I think he just said on fruit trees generally.
Just fruit trees in general. And are they ever too big?
Yes.
To actually cut back? I would say yes. They may not branch out all that well on really big stuff. Now, you know, what does that mean, big stuff? Probably on fruit trees, you can certainly get away with something maybe that's the size of your wrist, maybe. They might go ahead and branch out a little bit. But the problem is if you do a lot of heavy, heavy pruning, so you're trying to prune it down but not actually remove that branch. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, I'm actually, you know, the fruit trees have grown tall, and I'm thinking about cutting off the top so that I can reach the fruits easier.
Right.
But the branches are like 4 inches thick.
Okay. So I think what I would probably do is really look at it and see if you can actually remove the whole branches, you know, down to the next branch. This is hard to explain with on radio. But to actually remove that whole branch down to the next branch that may be smaller and then cut back a smaller branch to make it shorter. And I don't know if I'm making any sense at all.
That is making
yeah.
sense.
Well, because the problem is when you cut back those really big, you know, thick ones like that, they tend to produce lots of sucker, you know, these little suckers, those sprouts, that water sprouts that just take off. And so you end up with this other issue of all these water sprouts and you're trying to cut off some of them, and it really sometimes creates more issues. So if you can actually take it down to the next size, to the next, you know, branch, and then do some smaller cuts then. So removing whole branches, do some smaller cuts, you don't get nearly all those water sprouts coming up.
Okay, and last question, should I put some kind of dressing on that cut?
No, we don't recommend that at all anymore. So you don't have to do it. The plant will do what it needs to do. As long as you do a good job, don't leave any big, you know, stubs. Try to take it back so it's a, you know, fairly close to the stem but not completely close. You might want to do, you know, actually some fairly nice books and stuff out there on pruning trees, and you might just sort of, you know, look at those again. But you certainly don't have to put tree paints on them anymore. Okay.
Well, I hope that gets to the question. And next is someone in Danville. Right here, line two. Hello.
Hello. How are you guys this morning?
Hi. Good.
Good.
My question is on worms. Can you add worms to soil? And what kind?
Yeah, you know.
I used to treat my lawn a lot.
Right.
Before we got smart.
Right.
And I don't think I have a lot of worms to, you know.
Well, there's some question on whether the soil, I guess it's almost a build it and they will come kind of thing when it comes to earthworms in particular. Mm-hmm. So usually if it's the only thing is, I guess the reason I'm hesitating here, if it's really lousy soil, the earthworms won't live in it. They just can't. They have to have a certain amount of decomposing, you know, organic matter, those kinds of things. There certain needs to be certain. If it's really, really wet soil, they don't do very well in that. So it has to be halfway decent soil. So you can't just, you know, have lousy soil, throw a bunch of earthworms out there and expect them to do something. So it has to be somewhat, you know, after maybe adding some thin layers of compost or something to sort of improve this soil. So generally, I'm not one to really recommend adding a bunch of earthworms. Now, if you want to save some from the local bait shop just because you want to, you know, and go for it. But you really have to sort of create the situation, and then they come in. It's pretty amazing. Okay. Now, you can buy worms for compost piles, but those are actually completely different worms. Those are red wigglers, and they live in compost piles. So they're a completely different worm, and those are fine to go ahead.
Where would you get those?
Actually, red wigglers, you can buy them at bait shops. Yeah, and
red wigglers,
and those go into your compost pile. They don't live in, they're not earthworms. They don't live in the soil like the other ones do, but they do a great job on compost piles.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Uh-huh. I appreciate it.
Very good. And we'll go on to another caller in Tuscola next, line four, right here. Hello. Hi.
Hi. I have a very old amaryllis plant. It's probably 50 years old.
Wow.
A friend of mine gave me.
Good for
and
you.
And I'm just scared to death I'm going to mess it up. I brought it in the fall, of course, and it's in the house now till spring. And I noticed it's had a few of the bottom leaves turning yellow and falling off. And I wonder, how do I care for it until spring?
Now, was it one that she normally would go ahead and put it through a dormancy? Did she tell you anything about how she took care of it for 50-some years?
She brought it into the house every winter, and then spring took it back outside, and it bloomed every year.
Okay. So evidently it's one that does okay without going through a dormancy, because some of them have to have like a three-month dormancy with everything. So I think you're doing fine. Okay. You just want to grow it, you know, just grow it on like a house plant. Probably the biggest thing with them is that they can actually take fairly dry soil, but they don't like really wet soil.
Okay.
So just making sure that you don't overwater it, that's probably going to be the big thing. You're going to get some yellow leaves on the bottom. That's probably pretty normal for those guys because they generally like a little higher light than what we're going to have indoors. So they're kind of just hanging out over the wintertime. So I wouldn't worry about that too much, but just overwatering is probably going to be the biggest issue. I assume it's been repotted over 50 years somewhere along the line.
She repotted it before she gave it to me.
Oh, okay. So it's set to go.
It looks pot bound, but I'm assuming it likes it that way.
Yeah, they actually like to be, you know, fairly tight in the pot. So that's just fine. And you might get lucky. You might actually start to produce some babies off to the side. I don't know if she's ever said that, but sometimes they produce babies off the side, and then I'll give you a little bit. Maybe I'll make you feel better. You won't feel like it.
Should I have it in a sunlit room? I mean, with a lot of light?
Yeah, they really like high light.
Okay.
Yeah. So if it's one that she hasn't had to put through a dormancy like we often do in the wintertime, but if I would just grow it like a houseplant and just enjoy it from there. Probably start fertilizing it maybe in March or so when we start getting those longer day length.
Okay, just a normal household fertilizer?
Yep. That'd be
very good. Good. Wonderful.
Okay, great. Good for you.
Thank you so much.
All right, well, thank you for the call. We have some other callers here. Sandy Mason is with us. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care, and we have about 10 minutes or so left in this part of the show. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. And the next caller is in Lovington, line 3. Hello.
Hi. I got a neighbor that has a garden right next to a field, and I used to actually farm where this garden is. And the other day, they were asking me about fertilizer. And I soil tested this stuff, and it's got some benefit for some dairy cow leavings a long time ago. And the soil test on it was like 240 and between 400 and 600 on the K. Is there any reason to fertilize that garden? I told them probably not, and now I wonder whether I'm such an expert on gardens.
You know, most of the time for our soils, you really don't have to do a lot of fertilization. It doesn't sound like that really needs it, to be honest with you. I think probably because nitrogen in particular is the thing that is really very mobile in the soil, is that generally I think it's a good idea just to add compost because you're adding a certain amount of nitrogen at that point. So depending on what they're growing, if they're just I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, that's the beauty of our soils is that generally it has most of the nutrients they're going to need. So I think you're right. So
okay,
you can say it with confidence.
All right.
Thank you for the call. On to Urbana, line number 1. Hello.
Hi. What about coffee grounds in the compost? Does that have an effect on the pH, and is it good or bad or what?
Actually, coffee grounds are great. I use them all the time in my compost pile. And you actually can, if you have filters, the little paper filters, you can add those in there too. That's just fine. And it really doesn't change the pH all that much. And they really have found that most of the time and most of the stuff that we're using in the compost pile, most of our compost actually ends up being around neutral, ends up being about 7 anyway. So it's really kind of amazing. There's a lot of buffering going on there. So it really doesn't change it. So I think go for it. Add coffee grounds. You know, collect them from your neighbors. Tea bags. I had tea bags. I had all that stuff. So it's great.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Sure.
No, thanks. I think some people maybe hear discussion of composting and think that there's something hard about it. And it's not. Provided you have a good place, you probably don't want to have it right by your neighbor's back door. You can probably help it. You want to maintain good relations with the neighbors. That you would like to put a bat. There are certain things you should not put in.
Right.
You do want to have a kind of a balance of things, and you do have to stir it up. Other than that, pretty much all you're talking about is digging a hole.
Yeah.
You know, you got to have some place to put it. Other than that, there's really not that much to it.
Right, right. And, you know, and the saying is compost happens. It happens. You know, things rot. Things that are organic, used to be alive, they rot. And what we can do when we garden with compost is we can speed up the process. We can make it happen faster just by, you know, either having smaller particle, you know, shredding things up, turning it, as you said, that will help speed it up. So we can speed things up, but you don't have to, you know. You don't necessarily have to do all those things. But, you know, as you said, there's certainly things that you don't want to put in there. So any kind of, you know, like chicken bones or any of the meat type products, it's a good idea to leave any of that stuff out. other than that, we don't have a whole lot of other things that, you know, I put eggshells in there. That's fine. Probably some of the other things that don't decompose all that fast are things like orange rinds and, you know, the citrus. They don't decompose all that fast, but eventually they will. So you can do those things, but it'll eventually, even just letting it sit there, eventually it'll decompose, but it'll take a lot longer. It may take a whole year before the whole thing really starts to do much, and all the good stuff will be at the bottom, of course.
Yes.
So generally just thinking about, you know, wet stuff and dry stuff. So shredded leaves are great, and then adding shredded leaves with maybe any kind of green plants, anything like that, coffee grounds, anything that's moist like that, add that with the shredded leaves. Throw in a little either used already made compost or soil. You don't need to buy any special compost starters or any of that kind of stuff. All the stuff you need is just in good soil or just ready-made, you know, compost you've already made. Just add that in as your starter. And then if you can mix it periodically, that's great, but you don't have to. It's just going to take longer for it to decompose.
Okay. Piatt County, here's another caller. Line four. Hello.
Oh, hello. Thank you so much for talking about compost, because we decided when we moved out that we would compost.
Yay!
My question is, in weather like this, with all the snow and I'm taking out our kitchen coffee grounds and everything like that, it's, you know, essentially frozen, so I'm dumping it on there and it's just sitting there. I mean, am I supposed to be covering it up with shredded leaves and something green? I mean, I always wondered that about winter. You read these wonderful articles, like you said, about putting all this stuff on it, but what about in the dead of winter?
Yeah, now I always try to put stuff on top of it. Okay. Simply because, you know, it doesn't look all that attractive to have eggshells and stuff on top of it, sitting on top of this thing. And just plus the fact that you don't want to encourage any other varmints or anything to think this is a good place to go. So generally what I do, and usually I just have like a trowel out there, and a lot of times you'd be amazed that just the top surface a little bit is kind of frozen, but then underneath it's not. So sometimes you can actually sort of flip off the top lid, the frozen lid, stick that stuff in, and then put that piece back on, or just have some shredded leaves. I actually use I use shredded paper from time to time. Now, if it's real windy or if it's not moist, then it tends to blow. But even things like shredded paper, you can put in there. So I think it's a good idea to go ahead and cover it, just because I think it looks better and all those kind of things. But it's not going to do a whole lot of decomposing, you know, this time of year. But it's still, there's no reason why you can't go ahead and add stuff to it this time of year. So that's great. Good for you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, very good. Robinson next. It's line number one. Hello.
Sandy.
Uh-huh.
This is your other father.
My radio dad.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I seldom disagree with anything you say on your program.
Uh-oh. But.
But in regards to chicken bones, I do disagree.
Oh, really?
I cannot tell you how many times I have discovered desiccated chicken bones or bones, bird bones, in my garden, and which roots have hurried to grow into them to absorb the minerals.
Right. I think it's more of an issue of the concern about varmints, you know, as in, you know, attracting any kind of rodents or anything that might decide that they really are raccoons or whatever. So I think that's probably part of it, to be honest with you.
Okay.
So, but I think you're right. I mean, certainly if there's ways to use those, they actually make these things called digesters. I don't know if you've ever seen those. They're actually not composters, but they look like a big green cone thing. And those kind of things, you actually put bones and stuff in, it just digests it. So
certainly the addition of bone meal.
Right. You're right.
Is a benefit. So granted, it takes you more years, but it will work.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, bones do have a certain amount of nutrients and stuff to it. I think it's more of the being cautious about the fact of either creatures or maybe just the idea of having meat products and stuff in there, the concern about just sanitary kinds of
things. You really don't want to be attracting animals to be digging around in there because there's something they're looking. I mean, it may be enough that they might decide they'd like to have a nice orange rind.
But another thing.
That being there. But,
so
but,
it's probably just caution, probably as much as anything.
Okay. We're coming down here. We have a couple of minutes left. I don't know if there's any last sort of thing that occurs to you that you might want to mention to people. I guess maybe you can plug the Herb Day just one more time.
Yes, absolutely. Herb Day is this Saturday. So it's always it always seems like it's the thing that get us ready thinking about spring. So Herb Day is January 22nd. It's at the Holiday Inn in Urbana. And it's just a great opportunity to hear a lot of great speakers. And if people want more information and they need to register register right away to make sure they can get lunch. The number's 217-244-1693, and they can, or they can call your local extension office. They'll probably also have information on how, if you didn't get that number down. So that's always a good opportunity to kind of get ready.
Well, and I guess I was going to ask you, I'm sure we talked about this before, that for people who would just like to have maybe a couple little pots in their kitchen, or if they have a sunny spot that for culinary use, and it is really nice mm-hmm. to be able to clip off some thyme or some rosemary or something like that. And it doesn't really, you don't really need an enormous amount of it spice up whatever you're doing. And it's really nice to be able to have it there during the wintertime. In the summertime, you know, you can just go out the back door and do that. But it can be a little tricky getting them to grow inside. And I guess I have had sort of mixed results. And I don't know if there's anything in particular that you have to suggest that says, here, do this and you'll have better.
Yeah. Well, I know we've talked about rosemary in the past because I love having rosemary in the wintertime it goes with a lot of foods I think that we cook in the wintertime. But it is probably one of those that's kind of tough. And so if you've killed people have killed rosemary in the past, don't feel bad. There's a lot of people that have killed rosemary in the past. I think the biggest thing is just if you can find a cool spot. Really, they don't like the heat. They don't like the dry heat that we have in the wintertime. So if you can find a cooler spot, you know, maybe an area, a room, whatever, that maybe don't heat as much, that's good. And then don't let it dry out too much. And I know I read the labels all the time. It said don't let it get too wet. But what I found, mine dries out a lot in the wintertime. So you still have to water them on a regular basis and don't let them dry out too much. But other than that, that's probably the big things on those. And then we're going to get up to here, you know, very soon. People can start starting things from seed if they want to. It gets a little bit harder unless you have some sort of supplemental lighting like fluorescent lights. But if you have a really, you know, a bay window or something where you're getting light from several different areas, you could certainly start basil. It's very easy from seed. And that might be a good one to sort of start out with because it's so easy and, you know, people like having a little fresh basil. It's just not the same as the dried stuff.
And that's and you can get enough. I guess the trick is, do you have some place where you really get good light? Unless, well, as you say, you can supplement it with artificial light.
Right. And that's probably the big thing. This time of year, generally, their daylight length just isn't long enough for most plants to really do well, especially highlight plants. So if you can get some supplemental lighting in there. And the nice thing is we've got all these, you know, these new fluorescent bulbs and stuff that you can, you know, with all kinds of fixtures. And usually you can do a pretty good job of adding some supplemental lighting or at least adding the daylight length to it so it does better.
Well, thanks very much.
Sure.
Sandy Mason, she's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here once a month, almost on a Tuesday, to talk about lawn and garden care. We'll see you next month.
Yeah, sure.